Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Just Talk Radio. Just Talk Radio is a safe platform for young women to come together, talk about life's challenges.
For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. Jeremiah 29:11. Detour is a ministry created as a safe house for men and women to come together without judgment to share their detour in life. Have you ever framed your world only to find out life, roadblocks, settling, being stuck, and suddenly a detour appears? What does your detour look like? This ministry is designed for us as kingdom ambassadors to come together in unity on one accord, to live on purpose through the gospel of Jesus Christ. With God, everything has purpose, even the detours. For more information about the Detour Radio Show, contact Rosalind Farrell at 972-292-8544 or email whatisyourdetour@gmail.com.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Rosalind Farrell, and I will be your host for today's Detour Radio Show. Before we get started and before I introduce the speaker, I'm going to go ahead and lead us in prayer. So, Father God, we come to you today in the name of Jesus, God. Thank you for this opportunity, oh God. We thank you for this ministry of the Detour Radio Show, God. We thank you, God, that we can come together on this platform without judgment, oh God, to share our story with life, roadblocks, not settling and being stuck. But, God, just giving you all the glory. Father God, we thank you. We honor you. We give you all the praise and glory and all these things we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. So before we get started, I'm going to give Mr. Eddie Farrell a few more minutes to come in. Unmute lines of our callers. Do we have Eddie on the line right now? Let me go ahead and unmute the line.
Okay. I think I'm on the line. Am I on the line? Can you hear me? Hello? Hello? Hello?
We can hear.
Oh, okay.
Not sure where Roz, if Roz is still there.
Eddie, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. All right. So let's, okay, yep, I can hear you now, Eddie. All right, I'm going to go ahead and introduce our guest speaker for the evening, Mr. Edward DJ Eddie F. Farrell. He is an American producer, DJ, a songwriter, executive, and entrepreneur. He is the co-founder and partner of The Rep, where he was the DJ for Heavy D and the Boys. He is also mostly known for his various work and projects, serving as the founding owner of Untouchable Entertainment Group. Mr. Eddie F. is from Mount Vernon, New York. He's been working on several projects, which I'm going to leave that up to when we have our conversation. So, again, Eddie, thank you so much for joining me on today on the Detour Radio Show. I do appreciate you taking the time to come out and share your journey and your story. So I know you are a legendary, an icon for the industry of music. You have a love for music. You're really behind the scenes, kind of quiet in things that you do. But I just want you to start out by just giving us a snippet of your journey and what got you started.
Oh, well, first, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm doing fantastic, actually. My journey, let's see. Well, I started as a DJ, and I'm from Mount Vernon, as you said, and a lot of people may not know, Mount Vernon is right next to the Bronx, New York, where hip-hop was born. Two sides of Mount Vernon actually are adjacent to the Bronx. And where hip-hop was born, Cedric Avenue, Cool Herc, all that is about, you know, between 15 to 20 minutes away from where I grew up in Mount Vernon. So as I'm saying all that to say, as hip-hop was starting in the Bronx, you know, Mount Vernon was also being affected by hip-hop culture because we were the next town over. So as a matter of fact, there was a park up the street from where I grew up called Brush Park, and they used to do block parties in the park. And Bambada, Jazzy J, Red Alert, and all those guys used to come and do block parties in the park. They used to be there. I was probably about 8 or 9 years old, but I would hear the music, and, you know, I would hear loud music on a whatever Saturday or whatever, and I would you know, walk. I was a little kid. I would walk up the block and, you know, just watch people DJing and rapping and stuff. And this is when, like, hip-hop was first starting. And what's funny about that is years later, 20 years later or so, you know, by then, you know, we had made records. We were in the music business. I know Red Alert personally. And I was talking to Red Alert about that one time. He says, oh, yeah. He says, you know, he's like, you know, Kenny J from the Collins Brothers, which was a crew from Mount Vernon, the Collins Brothers, a big DJ crew. He's like, Kenny J from the Collins Brothers, you know, that Collins Brothers, you know, that's my half brother. So he's like, that's why me, Damn Jay, we used to come up to Mount Vernon all the time. So I'm like, wow, that's crazy. I'm like, that's hip hop history. So Red Alert's half brother was in a hip hop crew from Mount Vernon. So at the same time when Bambada, Red Alert, Jazzy J, they were all getting started, he was also getting his half brother started, which are, you know, some of the roots of hip hop. So I'm saying all that to say that's how I got sparked into music. And back then, you know, everybody wanted to be either a DJ, a rapper, or a breakdancer or something like that. So I picked DJing. That was the thing I liked. And then, for a long time, I was like a non-professional DJ, kind of just in the house, in the basement. My mother had bought me DJ equipment for either Christmas or my birthday. I can't remember which one, but she bought me DJ equipment when I was like 13, like real DJ equipment. And I just would practice. And I remember buying my first record. I remember walking all the way across town. I bought Apache and Bongo Rock. It was a breakbeat. I only had enough money to buy one. I went walked all the way across town, bought that record. That was one of my first records. And for people that know hip hop, it's like a staple in breakbeats. And then now I'm gonna speed it up. So that's my like hip hop kind of like beginnings. And started DJing. Eventually, started doing house parties, and then I became really popular doing the house parties, and then doing all the parties at Mount Vernon High School. And at one point, I just kind of took over Westchester. I started doing all the parties in Westchester. This was probably somewhere between 84 and 86. And a mutual friend, Trouble T. Roy, from our group that passed, R.I.P., he introduced me to Heavy and told me Heavy was trying to make a record. And, you know, he was like, you know, Eddie F. And me and Heavy became friends immediately. We clicked immediately. It was like we had been friends for years. I knew Mount Vernon is small, so I knew you pretty much, you know everybody. Even if you don't know them, you would know of them. You would know who they are, even if you didn't hang out with them. So I knew who Heavy was, but I didn't know him personally like that. And then when we started hanging out, we became really tight. We started making demos. And at the same time, I'll Be Sure was also in my high school. And Al used to sing all the time. He would just sing a cappella. He used to sing in the lunchroom. He would just be singing in the hallway. He just would be singing. And me and Al became friends just from, you know, I think one day he was singing and he might know I was, you know, DJ. And then we kind of we became really cool. And then he actually, you know, he would come by the house all the time when I would do parties. He would come. He would come. He would carry the record sometimes. He would just be down with the crew, just down with the, you know, the party crew, which was kind of cool. So me, him, Heavy, we were kind of like a little collective. And we were all trying to make records. And Al used to actually rap. And funny story, Al used to rap in the style of Slick Rick. So, and with Slick Rick was also Dana Dane. They all had that kind of, that English accent, you know, rap style. And there was a part, I used to DJ, you know, in the basement and stuff. There was a part in the record on Dana Dane Nightmares. And there's a part in the record where Dana Dane says, I forget the line, but at the end of the line, he says something, because I'll be sure. And he's saying, I'll be sure. But it sounds like, because of the accent, it sounds like I'll be. So there was a part where I would used to be cutting. We were doing demos, and I was cutting the I'll be, because, you know, Al Brown. And I let it slip, and it was like, I'll be sure. You know, and then that's how he got his name. And then he called himself I'll Be Sure because of that because of that scratch. And that's how he actually got his name, I'll Be Sure. Which is really from Dana Dane saying, I'll be sure on Dana Dane Nightmares. So,
who's going to pay my rent? I will.
Oh.
Okay. If you are listening in, please mute your line. And then we come in, I'll mute you and have, if you have any questions or comments for Eddie, but when you come in, please mute your line. Sorry about that, Eddie.
No, that's fine. So, so, long story short, I used to read the records. I was a DJ, so I read all the records. And all of the popular groups, let me not say popular. There were a lot of popular groups. The groups that had the biggest commercial success, all of them except one. There was Curtis Blow, it was Run DMC, it was LL Cool J, Houdini, Fat Boys. All of these groups, they all were managed by this one company, because I see it on the records. It say Rush Management, except for the Fat Boys. The Fat Boys were the only ones that were managed by somebody else. So I'm reading the records, and we have been making demos. And so one day I'm like, we should try and go to this company. We should try and go to Rush, because Rush has all the big, you know, big name artists. I'm reading it on the record. So so it's me, Heavy, Al, and also Novell. And Al or Heavy is like, yo, let's see if we can call him. So we back then you had phone books, big phone books. So we look in the phone book. Al looks in the phone book, gets the number for Rush Management. And we all decide, you know, Al has the most professional deep voice. So Al calls, and, you know, we kids, we don't know you can't call and just get a request a meeting with Russell Simmons. So he calls and says, yes, it's Al Brown, you know, trying to see if, you know, we could have a meeting with Russell Simmons to start a demo. And the person, I guess, on the other line says, you know, he's not available. He doesn't take out social meetings or whatever. And they, you know, they hang up the phone. So then we like, so what happened? What happened? He's like, oh, they said he doesn't take meetings, unsolicited meetings or what. So then Hev is like, yo, we should go down there. And so we're like, okay, let's go down there. We get the address from the phone book. Now, mind you, we don't even know how to get there. So we have to ask Troy's big brother, how do you get to this address? He's like, okay, drive, get over here, go through the toll, take the West Side Highway, stay all the way to the right. When you get to 56th Street, you're good. But we go, we drive down to the office. It's me, Heavy, Novell, and Al. I'll be sure. We had already decided Heavy and Al were going to be the talkers. Like, me and Novell was there, but we were just kind of, like, in the back. Like, I was more, like, in the, you know, business end, just trying, you know, just strategy. Heavy and Al was going to be the talkers. So we go to Rush Management, and, you know, we see the receptionist, and they're like, you know, can I help you? And they're like, yeah, we're here for, you know, a meeting with Russell Simmons. We want to play a demo. And they're like, oh, do you have an appointment? He's like, we're like, no, nah, you know. We just came down. So at that time, Andre Harrell was vice president of Rush Management. So Andre comes from the back. I guess he's coming to get, like, either messages from the receptionist or have them type something or pick up facts or something. So he sees us. He's like, oh, hey, how y'all doing? He's like, who are y'all? He's like, oh, you know. And Heavy's like, yeah, my name is Heavy D. This is, you know, this is Eddie F, my DJ. This is Al. I'll be sure. And, you know, there's Novell. And he's like, all right. So he's like, where y'all from? He's like, no, Mount Vernon. He's like, y'all came all the way down from Mount Vernon? I guess he thought Mount Vernon was way. There's another place, Mount Kisco, which is like an hour and a half away from the city. It's way far away. So I guess he thought Mount Vernon was Mount Kisco, because Mount Vernon is not that far from the city. It's right next to the Bronx. It's probably 20 minutes from Manhattan, 15 minutes if there's no traffic. But anyway, he gets impressed. He says, like, y'all have a demo? All right, let me hear it. So we play the demo. He likes the demo, the beat. He's like, all right, who did the beat? He's like, my DJ did the beat. He's like, all right. He's like, so who are you? He's like, you Prince Marky D, and you got your man Rick Rubin Jr. And at the time, Rick Rubin was a big producer. Marky D was obviously big from the Fat Boys. So he's like, all right. He's like, all right. So he's like, I need you to go. He tells us what to do. He wants us to go back and make another demo and talk about it. He said, I need you to talk about concepts and talk about, you know, a relationship or tell a story. Like, let's just talk about, you know, partying. Or so we rush home to do a new demo. We're doing demos, and we're trying to get another meeting. And Heavy's calling Andre pretty much every day. So every day for, like, the next month, 3 months, 6 months, yo, did you get him on the phone? He's like, nah, I didn't get him today. Did you get him? Did you get him today? What'd he say? He's like, he said to call him next week. And long story short, after I don't even know how long it was, one day he says, okay, he tells us he's starting a new label and he wants us to be on his new label. So we end up, his new label, which was going to be, we didn't know at the time, he was getting a new deal. And he was doing a compilation album with MCA. And we were on the Uptown's Kicking It, compilation. And that's how we got started. That's how we got signed in the business. So me and Heavy signed together as business partners. And another funny story, our group was really put together like it was like a Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince or Eric B and Rakim, or it was like a duo group. But we wanted to have dancers, and we didn't want to just have dancers and they just be like on the shows. So me and Heavy had decided, you know, we should have dancers. And I was like, but they should be in the group. They shouldn't just be like dancers. So we ended up, and that's how it became. We actually didn't even have a name in the beginning. When we first did, we made our records. We didn't have Heavy D and the Boys. We were making records. We were Andre wanted us. He was such a fan of Dougie Fresh, and this is funny. He wanted our name to be Heavy D and the Come Off Crew. And I remember Heavy was like, "Nah, man, that's whack, man." He's like, "That's whack." He's like, "We're not gonna be." And so, and one of my other friends, Tony Watts, actually named the group. I remember we were in a studio session. He said, y'all should be Heavy D and the Boys. You should have the Boys with a Z. And I remember we were like, yeah, that's dope. Okay, yeah, we're going to use that. And that's how we became Heavy D and the Boys. And then after that, I produced records. I formed the Untouchables, which was my own crew of producers. And we started producing all kinds of records for Uptown. We did Horace Brown, we did Jeff Ray, we did Mary J. Blige's first album. Then I branched out. We did records for Motown, Johnny Gill, LaFaze of TLC, Mariah Carey, all kinds of, you know, Destiny Child's first single, No, No, No. One of our writers did that. We did one of the Untouchable producers did Case, Touch Me, Tease Me. Donnell Jones was my artist with Untouchables intro. Pete Rock and CL Smooth, They Reminisce, that's Untouchables. And through doing all these records and all this stuff, I ended up becoming, L.A. Reid called me. I had been doing some work with him, and I had done a bunch of remixes for him. And he asked me to be head of A&R for LaFace, and I became vice president of A&R and LaFace. I think that was around, what year was that? 93, 94, somewhere in there. And then after that, I became executive vice president of Motown, and we had 98 Degrees, Queen Latifah, we had Jason Weaver, but we also had Diana Ross, The Temptations, Stevie Wonder, and I was working with all those artists. And then, ironically, I was executive vice president at A&R at Motown, and I was working with all those artists, and that's when I met Michael Jackson. And I met Michael Jackson at the Motown Cafe. Funny story. Motown Cafe was around the corner from the Motown offices. So we just went, myself and one of my really good friends who was also A&R at Motown, we went by Motown Cafe one day. We just went by because we worked at Motown. We just wanted to check it out. And so we go there, and one of our friends, Tracy Jordan, who was actually running Motown Cafe, she's like, oh, guys. She's like, oh, he's great. She's like, okay, I want y'all to meet somebody. So the whole Motown Cafe is full of people. It's full of tourists. It's full of tourists and the people that's just there, and they're taking, you know, they're at the Motown Cafe. So they have an upstairs area, but the upstairs is like, it's dark and it's like roped off. It's like, you know how when you go to a restaurant, whatever, and the upstairs is closed. So they take us to the part where the upstairs is closed and it has like the little velvet, you know, rope thing. They pull the thing back, and we go upstairs, and we wonder, like, where are we going? We go upstairs. So we go upstairs, and when we go upstairs, all the way in the back in the corner, where you can't see unless you go up there, is Michael Jackson in the corner with a woman, and he's there eating. He's eating. He has all this stuff, like everything, like, you know, whatever, like, you know, whatever food they had. He has all the food around him. And I'm like, oh, snap, it's Michael Jackson. Like, so we go to meet him, and then she's like, you know, this is Eddie F., and he's executive vice president at Motown. Dice, he's vice president at Motown. So I'm talking, and I say, I'm partners. And this is when Mike had done the records with Heavy. So I said, yeah, I'm partners with Heavy. I said, me and him are partners. And he's like, oh, Heavy, I love Heavy. And, you know, we're talking about, and I said, you know, it's funny, I said, you know, we're at Motown. I said, I'm working with all your friends. I said, working with Diana, working with The Temptations, working with Stevie, and all your people, you know. And it's funny because it's cool to be talking to Michael Jackson, but it's even more cool to be like, I'm working with all your friends, all the people you came up. Like, he literally grew up with these people from a young kid. So I'm like, I'm working with all your friends. And I'm, you know, and I didn't tell him, but I'm proud of that. I'm proud to be like, I'm working with Motown. I'm talking to you about this. And I said, and so I'm like, you know, and I'm working with, you know, some of the newer artists too. And I mentioned some of the newer artists, and he's like, you know, and he's really excited because you could tell, you know, I'm pretty sure Michael Jackson being the mega star that he was, he probably didn't just have a lot of just conversations about just Motown and the old times and when he was, you know, because by then he moved on. He's at Sony and Epic and he does Thriller and all that, you know. So Motown was probably some fond memories of him when he was coming up, So I'm talking to him about all these people, and you could tell, you could see on his face, he's happy, and it's a, you know, it's a conversation that he's having fun with. And so anyway, we talked to him, and then I didn't even know somebody's there taking pictures. I have a picture, and it's a picture, and I'm really proud of this picture, because when I post, whenever I post a picture, I say, you know what's crazy about this picture? I'm like, this is a real candid picture. I'm like, I ain't got a picture of Michael Jackson, but there's no posing going on. You see me talking to him, and in front of him, you see a whole bunch of miscellaneous plates of foods and half-drink glasses, and so it's like real. It's not like we posed and it's the touch-up. It's like, yo, this is like real-time candid. I said, nobody have a picture of Michael Jackson where he's eating. He got food in front of him, and you're talking to him. I said, that's crazy. So the funniest thing about that whole thing is we're about to leave, and my friend who's with me, he tells Michael Jackson, he says, yeah, man, you could tell Michael is happy about the story. He tells Mike, he says, yeah, you should come back home. You should come, meaning he should come back and sign back with Motown. So I thought it was crazy that he told Michael Jackson, yo, you should come back home. Come sign back at Motown. So, and Mike says to him, you know, I was just thinking the same thing. And I'm like, that's crazy. So the next day we go back to the office and we have a staff meeting. And it's like 30, 40 executives. And we're telling them about how we met Michael Jackson, and it was great, and we're talking about it. And I tell everybody, I said, you know, I said, how crazy is Dice? I said, Dice, I said, this is my man. I said, he's crazy. I said, he told Mike, he says, yo, you should come back home. And Mike says, yeah, I was thinking about doing that. And the whole conference room got up, gave a standing ovation. It was crazy. It was, like, crazy. So wow. That Motown era was a really great experience. And then after being at Motown, I went back to being independent. And I put the second album out of an artist I had previously signed before I worked at Motown. And the name of that artist is Donnell Jones. And we put out the song, You Know What's Up, that featured Left Eye. It went to number one. It went to top five, top three, actually. It went to number one urban. It was number one for like 10 weeks in a row, gold single, first number one record of the new millennium. And that was a great experience with that whole thing, having Left Eye on the song. And, you know, and then since then, I've been just working on, I've been doing all kinds of stuff that people don't know about. I've done about 10 years ago, BET was remaking itself, and they had this campaign called We Got You, and it was like we got jokes, we got laughs, we got this, and it had Jamie Foxx and Mary and Lil Wayne. They all were in the campaign, and it was like We Got You, and it had the Aretha Franklin music behind it. And a lot of people don't know, like, I did the music for the commercial. I did the tracks. I didn't tell anybody, because I didn't want every producer that I know rushing to call BET to say, you need some music, you need some music. And for a long time, I was doing all the ad campaigns and all the music for all the BET. I did the when Mitt Romney was running against Barack Obama in 2012, I did all the music for that campaign, Ed Gordon. I did all kinds of stuff for BET. I was doing all their music. Like, I was their go-to guy. I did probably 10, 20 of their advertising commercials, all the music for all that stuff. I was doing commercials for Heineken, for Jeep. I did the In Living Color theme with Heavy. I did that all the seasons, the In Living Color TV show with the Wayans brothers and all that and that stuff. I did that theme song. And I'm thinking through my reel of the stuff that I did, which brings me to, so what have I done most recently? Last year, I scored before COVID, I scored a movie, Hip Hop Holiday. It was actually on BET. I think it was also on Amazon and somewhere else, and the other place, TV One and some other places. And it starred, Taronda Jones from Empire. She was the lead. Also, Wendy Raquel Robinson, and it was directed. Terry Vaughn directed the movie, and she had me do the score. I did the score for that film, that came out last year. And I've been doing stuff like that. I've been doing scoring. I've been doing commercials, ads, things like that. And I'm actually about to put out a bunch of new music now. But that's like that. So that's the long condensed version of the last what I've been doing for the last 30 years. So that's, and I left some stuff out here and there, but I don't remember what I missed.
Wow, you amazing, amazing journey, Eddie. And I don't know if you remember this. I remember Uncle Edward saying, "Well, you know your cousin DJ Heavy D and the Boys," and I'm like, "Yeah." And at first, and hip hop was like like I love hip hop. So at that time, I think I was like thinking I was Cinderella trying to spin, burning, tearing up my dad's records, trying to spin on the record player, watching you, listening to you. So I looked up, like, and when you guys came to St. Louis for a concert, you probably don't even remember this thing. You guys came over to my grandparents' house before the concert. All of that stuff, I remember, like, all of that. So I'm walking with you as your journey. I'm like, man, just how you have just grown up throughout your entire career. So amazing.
Wow.
Amazing. You're truly inspired. Like, I have my honors in the music industry, and I always say, I'm practicing my follow lives knowing I can't hold a tune. And then my brother's in the music industry, produces beats, and I listen to all the little genius stuff he does behind. I'm like, oh, God, let me just stay in my lane. But I commend you guys. So thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. I do have
followers
on the line. Sam, you're welcome. The opportunity to ask you any questions or make any comments. We're going to move on to the next question. So what influences or mentors, such as someone, behind your passion, someone that truly have inspired you to do what you're doing?
So I have what I call the adults, the people that were doing it before us. They were the grown-ups, which were, there were three different people. It was, three different groups of people. Quincy Jones, L.A. and Babyface, and Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis. They were like, I always looked up to them as producers, as guys that made music. They always inspired me, and they were kind of like, they were doing it, and Quincy was always like, Quincy was doing, Michael Jackson, and he had his name on records, his logo with the big Q, and he was just, and he did Michael Jackson. So, and then after I got in the business, my two big brothers, Teddy Riley and Marley Marl, who they were already producing, and I was just the guy making beats and trying to learn and figure it out. And, I always, now that I look back, I say, man, it's so crazy. And I got to just thank Andre Harrell, period, just for plugging us into everything and everybody, and just plugging us. We didn't even know how much we were being plugged into everything hot and everybody that was great. I got a special, education as a producer, because I was like, I don't know how many people could say they had their big brothers when they came in the game with Marley Marl and Teddy Riley. Like, I'm like, that's crazy. What? Like, the king of hip hop and the king of hip hop R&B, those were both the guys who brought me in the game, which is why I think I can switch gears. I could do a Pete Rock and Sale Smooth album, but then I could do an intro album, is because I'm thinking I had the Marley Marl sensibility, and then I also have the Teddy Riley sensibility. And then Andre Harrell, of course, with just his cultural influence on everything. But yeah, those are people that inspire me. And then there's others, I'm a DJ at the end of the day. So there's so many people that inspire me just from a musical standpoint. All the greats, James Brown, Stevie Wonder, Michael Jackson, Prince, Marvin Gaye, Patrice Rushen. There's like so many people, you know, the whole Philly International sound, Gamble and Huff. There's just so many. And I used to listen to all those records, you know. My dad used to have all those records, all the 70s records, and I, you know, I could hear all of them, you know, in my head, you know, which they kind of now made a resurgence. But all of that stuff. And I remember I used to have all the 45s because my dad had all the, he had all the Motown 45s and, you know, so I had all those 45s, Bill Withers and just all that stuff, like James Brown, you know, all those records. So yeah, that's my inspiration. And then, you know, and then like I was telling you earlier, hip hop came into play. And then, you know, how, just like how you felt with hip hop, we all felt that. I think everybody, you know, at a point just felt that, you know, because the thing about hip hop represented not just music, it represented a movement for young people. It was like, this is our music. This is our fashion. This is our slang. This is our communication. Yeah. It was everything. It wasn't just the music. It was the whole, it was a whole culture, you know, that represented young people.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. All right, I'm going to open it up for our callers. If you guys have any questions or comments, you can do so at this time. I have everyone unmuted, so if you have any questions or comments, you can go ahead and do so at this time.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, Kite, Rosalind, and Eddie. This is your Aunt Percy.
Hey.
Hi, Aunt Percy.
I know
how
you guys are shocked to hear. I'm good. How are you?
I'm great.
Yeah, good. I'm good. Okay, but I think I wanted to, what you have going on here within as far as producing in the next, say maybe 5 to 6 months now, you have any new entertainers coming out or whatever?
I'm working on a couple of things. I'm not sure what's going to come out when, but I'm kind of working on the DJ Eddie F Present series, and it's going to be just songs with different artists, different people that I've worked with over the years. And we're just gonna be and it's gonna be new artists and artists that you've heard before over the last 20 years.
Okay.
It's gonna be both.
Okay. Okay. Good.
I just want to kind of give a vehicle for artists to be exposed because and give them some kind of push behind them because what's happened is with the internet age, everything has become, you know, YouTube, Instagram, how many followers, how many TikTok, how many likes you got. And so I want to at least just try to identify talent and help some people that just, you know, and I'm not with these artists. I'm not going to be like, I'm not even going to be trying to like sign them or anything. I'm just going to be like doing records with them because I just want to get great music out here. Like, you know, music that I came up and grew up on.
Okay. Thank you, guys. And Rosalind, I want to tell you, I really appreciate you listening to the show today. And Eddie, good luck on your ventures and what you're trying to do in the future. Hey, Percy, love you guys.
Hey, thank you.
Love you, too.
I am the older person on his dad's side of the family. So I'm the
oldest. Yeah, I know. You know. my dad's running partner.
Yeah, absolutely.
Love you guys.
Love you, too.
Does anyone else
have
any questions?
Hey, Eddie.
Says
Erica.
Yes.
Hi, Erica.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. So I just want to say, as an entrepreneur, what message can you give our new upcoming DJs and artists that are pursuing the music business?
A couple of things. One, whatever path you're taking, one is take it seriously. I think a lot of people look for the money and the instant result, and they want to like do something and they want it to turn around fast, and they think everything is fast. And what I want to tell people is that people that I know that have had major success or sustained success, not one of them had got success fast overnight. And even the big huge ones, even I don't care, even Puff, Diddy, Jay-Z, Alicia Keys, who were all these people, they all grinding. Some of them had deals, got dropped from deals, put out whack albums first, everything. And they put people think a lot of times when people have success that it just happened. It happened overnight. And it didn't. So you need to be persistent and it could be a long journey, but it's worth it. And invest in yourself. And also, one very important thing, everything is not, and I know I said this, but it's another twist to it. Everything's not about money, meaning everything's not about how much are you going to get paid right now to do this gig or to do. Sometimes it's the right gig to do, even if you don't get paid. Sometimes it's the right, it's just to be at the right event. It's to do. Sometimes it's like, hey, I'm going to do this event and just be in the room or get that exposure, and I worry about getting paid later on something else. And sometimes you do that, and it turns into, as a matter of fact, something I didn't say in my story is that I was working with L.A. Reid. I was doing remixes for TLC, and I helped him. He had a problem at Black Radio when TLC first came out. Ain't Too Proud to Beg. I remixed that song, and it fixed the problem. He had a problem because the record, if you remember Ain't Too Proud to Beg, it was a lot of screaming and Ain't Too Proud to Beg, and it was real noisy, and R&B radio was giving him a problem with it. So I did a remix version. I made it more melodic, and it helped him in terms of a gold single. We had success. But when the second album came around, he needed a remix for Creep, and he had sent it out. He had 10 remixes done, and he didn't like any of them. And he called me after he had all the mixes done. He was like, man, I need your help with this mix. And then he said, I had all these people. He said, but nobody could get it. It's not right. So I'm not going to name any of the names, but a lot of big names remixed. So I said, send me the mixes. He sent me the mixes, and I heard what the problem was. But he didn't have money left because he had already spent $70,000 doing 10 mixes. So I said, don't worry about paying me. I said, just send me the reel and just pay for the studio time. So I went in the studio and I did the remix. I remixed Creep. I sent it to him. He loved it. It was a smash. He called me yelling on the phone. And then I was just happy because I was fans of LA and Babyface. And I was fans of TLC. I had already done work with them and had success. So I was just happy to do. I was making money with Heavy Dinner Boys and my other music. So I wasn't like the money. I was just happy to do. Long story short, he called me 2 weeks later and was like, remember we were talking about doing the A&R? You know, yo, man, you should do A&R for us. And I was like, all right, let's put it together. He hired me for A&R, and my salary when I started was $250,000 a year. I did that remix for free, and it turned into a $250,000 A&R gig. So,
wow.
You know, and so my point is, don't always think about the money. I'm not just saying that. I've actually experienced it.
Wow. Okay, thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Erica. Do we have any more comments that has any comments or questions? All right. So, Eddie, can you tell me what has happened? I already have said this, but I'm like, what is one of your most memorial things, a moment, that aha moment, or one of your life experiences that you just hold dear to your heart, like this one thing you feel like, aha, wow.
When I was executive vice president of A&R at Motown, that was an aha moment for me. And when I had that moment, I would just ride around in my car and I would play Motown songs. I would play the old Motown songs. And I was just thinking to myself that I'm executive vice president of A&R at Motown Records. I grew up on Motown Records. Like I literally grew up from a kid from 8, 9, 10, playing 45s of Motown Records, and now I'm executive vice president And I remember one Christmas, they had, because I was, head of a division, they had given me like 100 box sets of this double CD box sets. And I remember I was giving them to some of my, friends and people. And I remember people were like, wow, it's a Motown box set. And I remember like a lot of people were really floored by that. And I was just getting, not only me giving the gifts, but just when I was there. And I was like, I'm at the company that Michael Jackson built, that China Ross built, that Marvin Gaye built, the Temptations. And there's one thing, another little story attached to me being at Motown. When I first got to Motown, I guess it was really busy with the transition and the Temptations and Shelly Berger. They had been trying to get in touch with Andre, and they couldn't get him on the phone for whatever reason. And they were like, I guess they were mad because they were like, they were the Temptations. So I spoke to Shelly Berger, who was the manager, and he was like, he was pissed off. He was like, I don't know who got Andre, and he was mad. And I was like, no, I was like, it's really busy here. They just moved the whole company. I promise you the Temptations are a priority at Motown Records. I'm going to talk to Andre. And long story short, I end up fixing the situation. We had a big meeting. Shelly Berger came. The Temptations came. And I was really proud of that. But I was thinking to myself, like, I'm like solving the problem with the Temptations. I had similar situations with Stevie Wonder. And I have a poster where so this is The Temptations, while I was at Motown, we put out a single. And I didn't know The Temptations had never gone gold in their whole career. They end up having 2-3 gold albums at the same time. They all got certified gold while I was there. I didn't know The Temptations never went gold in their career. It was their first gold record. And I have a poster that Otis signed from the Temptations. And it says to Eddie F., thanks for always looking out for the Temps. And I was like, I mean, stuff like that, how that feels, I can't even, I'm so proud of that, just to have that and for him to say, and to know I did those things and to say, thanks for always looking out for the Temps and for them to go gold. And I'm like, I grew up with these guys are like, legendary artists around the world, so Motown and working with the Temps and Stevie Wonder. Stevie Wonder would never turn in his albums for whatever reason. Everybody complained and said, he is supposed to turn in the greatest hits album for 3 years, never turned in the album. And they were counting on this album. And they were like, good luck. And so I was in charge of getting the album turned in. So I knew we were doing greatest hits out, so I went and got all the Stevie Wonder catalog. I listened to every single record. It was like I was like studying for an exam. I just went through all his records, every single record. I put a sequence together, and I played him the sequence. But the thing is, I didn't deal with Stevie Wonder as like an executive, as a record person trying to get an album. I dealt with him as a music person. I dealt with him like I'm an artist. I know how it feels. I'm like, and in my mind, I'm saying to myself, he probably had turned his album in because he probably like y'all just rushing him trying to get some money. Like that's probably, I didn't know. I never asked him, but that's what I'm like. That's probably why. And he probably like y'all guys just want some money. Y'all don't care what my thing sound like. If I throw y'all a frisbee in there, y'all just gonna put it out. So I made sure that I really took pride, and I really knew all the songs, how they ended, and I played him the sequence, and when we did the sequence, I could hear him, he was in the background, he had the songs, and he had his machines, and he was playing, and he was seeing how they blend in, and he was like, okay, hold on, let me listen to that, and he was listening, and he only changed one thing of the whole sequence I did. He changed one thing, and he was like, yeah, man, I really like this, and then he turned in the album. And I got the album turned in, and it was like, and they were like saying it was going to be so hard, and it wasn't, to me, it wasn't hard at all. It was just somebody just had to like care about the music and care about what they were doing and not just try and get him to throw something together so that they could make money. It was about, and so I have that album too, where, you know, I'm executive producer and, you know, album sequence. And it's Stevie Wonder, you know, I'm excited just talking about it. Stevie Wonder, you know?
Yeah.
So that Motown piece, meeting Michael Jackson, Stevie Wonder, taking care of the Temptations, that's my aha. I love music, and that was the culmination of all of, like, everything that I had done in music.
Wow. And that's something to be very proud of, so I commend you for that. All right, do we have any callers, any more callers that have any comments or questions for Eddie? I think I have everyone on mute.
Hey, Eddie, this is Kendall. This is Cookie's other brother, Kendall Dumas. I was I'm a producer myself and a beat maker, but I just had a question about with the way things are nowadays. You mentioned the Instagram, the social media, the internet days that we in now. For like producers who just, you know, have a over 200 beat catalog and still making beats, and what advice would you give to the beat makers, the producers out there?
In terms of getting exposed, getting on projects,
just getting exposure and getting on projects, because that's definitely the start of it, you know. I have a lot of artists right now getting beats, but as far as like the exposure, even into the film and the movies and the TVs and the, you know, licensing, the commercial licensing.
There's a couple of outlets where you can get exposed, where you can, like, there's a couple of music sources I can't think of right now offhand, but there's one place I know that you can submit your music and put in a catalog, and they'll give you credit. Like, people will use it. I don't know how the money works, but right now, like I was saying before, it's not so much about the money. You want to get exposure. So if you have music and they put it in their library, and then people use it and they have your name on it, and, you know, you can even name some of the tracks, something that kind of, you know, it, you know, like, you know, your street or your, you know, studio room or something, you know, like, and also you'll be credited as the producer. But that's a way to kind of get out there, to just start to get out there. Because this thing is like, it's a snowball effect. It's like it's a spark that takes forever to get lit, and then, but once it gets lit, it just goes super fast. It's like it takes you 10 years to be an overnight hit. You know what I mean? It's like, and that's kind of how it is. And so that's that's what I was saying earlier when I was saying about somebody asked me a question about DJing. I was like, being just persistent and just kind of like just not even worrying about the money, just worry about the visibility, worry about the credit, like worry about, don't worry, because this is the other thing I tell people that make music. If you make music and you're serious about making music, you're going to always be making music. You're going to have, you got 10 tracks, you're going to have 20. You're going to have 100. You're going to have 500. So who cares? If you give away a track, and it blows up, it's such a, even if you didn't get no money for it, if you got the credit sometimes more important than even the money. Now, I'm not saying don't try and get any money. If you can, you can get some on the back end. But if it comes down to it, and it's just about being in the right situation, you want to just you want to definitely get yourself out there, and we could talk some more, you know, offline about that too. You know, there's some other things I just can't think of all the companies. I can get you the information, like the specific information.
I appreciate the time for even giving me the follow up. So thank you.
Yeah, definitely, we could do that.
Oh yeah. Because I got Song Trader is one of them that I've been on, but we can definitely talk to the other avenues. I know you have a lot more knowledge in that area.
Yep, we'll do. Yep, we can do that.
Yes, sir.
Yep, I'll make sure you guys are connected once we hang up tonight. So thank you. Thank you, Kendall, for joining us today. I appreciate that. That's my baby.
Glad I didn't
right
miss
there. Yes. All right. Do we have any more callers on the line that has any questions or comments for Eddie?
Cook, I do. This is Tia. Hi, Eddie.
Hello.
This is Cook's aunt, Rosalind's aunt. Both my sister and I used to work with Warner Chapel, and we, you know, and it's amazing that I didn't see you at LaFace. I was there in 94 working for the management group. So,
wow.
My question, yeah.
You are.
So I was there.
You know I had a joint venture talent finder deal with Warner Chapel. Did you know that?
No. Well, you know what? When I left L.A. because of the earthquake. But I actually was in the studio with Hev at Larrabee Studio. So I got a chance to meet him before I moved to Atlanta. And I was
what
there
year
with
was that?
Fake. I was there 94. 1994. He was
yeah,
in the studio.
Yeah, my deal with Warner
Boys
Chapel.
To Men.
With Les Biter. I did my deal with Les Biter
yeah.
in 1991.
I was there.
That's when
wow.
Jocelyn Cooper was there.
Yep. So yes, my sister Renee, she was in the legal department. I was in the copyright department. So yeah, everything you probably did, I had to. Yeah.
You still do copyright work?
Yes, yes, I do.
Oh man, I gotta talk to you.
Yes, please do. But my question.
I'm gonna say something to you. I'm gonna say something that you only gonna understand. Part of my stuff, my whole thing is reverting right now. I need to talk to you. Like
yes,
right
you
now,
do.
Right now.
It can't.
Yes.
You can't lose it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's funny because one of the is about to go public domain.
No.
Not public domain.
No. Just reverting to me.
Okay. So we'll talk off.
Yeah, I need to talk to you.
Yeah. So do you work with any gospel acts?
I have and I will. I want to. I love all kinds of music. Period.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I have and I worked with artist Pam and Doty over at this was Randy Jackson's artist before he went to American Idol. And I want to say they were on MCA and I was supposed to do something with Aaliyah Adams, but something changed around with the A&R at the time. We had some music mm-hmm. in, but I've been wanting to do something. I have done in my advertising stuff and television stuff. I've done a lot of stuff for TD Jake that he doesn't even know that I did. with his shows on BET, with his commercials and his shows, I provided a lot of music for that. He doesn't even know. A lot of these people don't know because a lot of it just happens in the background.
Gotcha.
Wow.
Okay. Well, you can get my information from Roz. We'll talk because I'm here to help in any way.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Do we have any more callers that have any questions or comments? All right. Eddie, we're going to wrap up with you just telling us what projects you currently have coming so we can be on the lookout for them. Any of your contact information, if someone inspires to get in contact with you, I know I follow you on all the social media sites. And I just want to say I appreciate you. Even from an entrepreneur side, it knows that you and I have been dialoguing here within the last few weeks. And one of the things that stood out that you were telling me, you were like, you know, you when you're talking to people, if they tell you no, just say okay and just keep going. Just, you know, because people are going to tell you no, so you got to get used to that. And I'm like, that's right. It, like, hit me so hard when you said that, but it's true. So just you just inspire me so much. You know, I know you're my first cousin, you know, our dads are brothers, but just watching you grow up, just we're the same age. I'm watching you grow up. So just keep doing what you're doing. You have amazing faith walk that I'm just inspired by everything that you do. So I appreciate it. Appreciate you saying that you will come today to, you know, dialogue with us today. So I appreciate that.
Oh, definitely, and I appreciate it. I definitely appreciate it. And we're going to, you know, we got some other stuff that we're working on as well. As far as what I'm doing, I talked about some of it with the DJ that presents, and I'm putting out some artists. I'm also, since you touched on it, which I wasn't even thinking about it, but I'm just going to mention it, I'm also doing some work in, with cryptocurrency and cryptocurrency education. And you can actually find me, all of my handles everywhere are DJ Eddie F. So I'm at DJ Eddie F on Twitter, at DJ Eddie F on Instagram. I'm / DJ Eddie F on Facebook. And there's a bunch of stuff that I forgot to mention, but I'm at DJ Eddie F pretty much everywhere. And if anybody wants to, contact me, they could, if you look on my Instagram profile, you can contact me there. There's also, if you want to know anything about, you know, the you know, cryptocurrency educational opportunities, there's also, if you look on my Instagram, there's a link. And if you click on that, you'll see like one of the options is, cryptocurrency education, my bio, and, you know, anybody, you can contact me through there. I'll get the notes.
Okay. All right. We're going to have any more callers that has any questions or comments. We're going to go ahead and close out tonight. I'm going to give you the opportunity for anyone that has any questions or comments.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Hi, Eddie. This is Rosalind's mother. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I just wanted to tell you I want to thank you for everything that you're doing and what you've done for, you know, just helping people. That just was so inspirational to me to hear you say that. So I want you to tell your mom I said hello. And also I just want to tell you just keep doing what you're doing, and we're so grateful for you, and I'm proud of you.
So thank you. And I will tell her, and I found like that's one of my things. I after all of this, the things that I've, you know, been involved with and done, I just found that I really enjoy helping people and helping artists. And like,
wow,
you know, or every time I work with an artist or help an artist, yeah, I'll have some success. I'll make some money as a result, but that's not what I'm thinking about. Sometimes I make money, sometimes I don't. But the part that really gets me, you know, it's nothing like helping somebody when the feeling of seeing them have success and knowing you're a part of it.
Yeah.
You know, having somebody's having an artist's mom say, thank you for helping my son. Thank you for helping my daughter. You know, I've had two that I could really notably mention. I remember, you know, Donnell Jones' mom saying, you know, thank you for helping my son. And actually, even back in the days, Puff's mom saying, thanks for helping my son and stuff, because I had helped him. When we were all at Uptown, and, you know, he lived with me at one point, and we were all coming up. And it's not like that feeling, like just knowing that. And I think it comes from even just me being a DJ playing music, because when you play music and people dance, you feel like you're giving people, you know, people are having a good time. And you feel good. You feel good even just playing a song, and people going, oh, and it's their song, and they're, you know, they're just having fun. I love doing that. It's nothing like that feeling, just helping people, you know. And then if you could have success and make money while you're doing it, then they make it even that much better.
Yeah. I love it, because you're blessed to be a blessing, and we just thank God for you.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
All right. Any more callers that have any questions or comments before we close out tonight? All All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us on the Digital Radio Show. I do appreciate everyone that took out their time. Eddie, special kudos to you. Thank you for taking your time. I do appreciate you. Thank you, Aunt Clem. I know you're on here. You're staying in the background, but just keeping, you know, keeping us grounded. You and I, just keeping our family grounded and making sure we're staying close and that we're communicating. So thank you all for just taking out the time of your evening to come on tonight and join us. I do appreciate you. Go and stay blessed. Have a blessed rest of the evening. And again, thank you. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Good night. God bless.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.